It is Sunday, August 18th, 2013. Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from Edible Oz Arkansas. Launching in September, this quarterly magazine focuses on food, farms, and culture in the Ozarks. Proceeds will benefit hunger relief efforts through Feed Fayetteville and Feed Communities. More information, including subscriptions, available at edibleozarkansas.com.
The Jazz Eureka 2013 Festival begins Friday, September 13th, and will continue to run through Sunday the 15th. This three-day event will include both free and ticketed music events. Performers include the Fayetteville Jazz Collective, Richard Bruton Quintet, Walter Savage Trio, and recording artist Spyro Gyra. Information is available on the web at eurekasprings.org.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, music made with bed springs and saw blades. And what's in a name? We learned the history of a lake in Rogers, and it isn't Beaver Lake.
But first, help. Sometimes we need it, and sometimes we give it. And there was news of both this week. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
Help, either giving or seeking it, has been a topic woven into several stories in the last 7 days. For instance, a new state veterans home would no doubt be beneficial to some of Arkansas's elderly veteran population. Though four proposed sites have been chosen for final review, Governor Mike Beebe says options are still open. While at the Arkansas State Veterans Cemetery Monday, Governor Beebe spoke about possible future locations for the veterans home, meant to replace a Little Rock facility that was shut down because of disrepair. Previously, a task force announced they were considering four locations in Jacksonville, Benton, Fort Smith, and Russellville. But Governor Beebe said options are not limited to just those four sites.
We're not limited to those four. So anybody else that wants to present a proposal, if it ends up being better in the eyes of the people that make that decision, will be considered. So it's not down to just those four. Those four certainly have a leg up, and rightfully so. They were screened by a committee, but we've made it very, very clear that there wasn't an artificial cutoff date.
The task force charged with making recommendations meets again in September to craft recommendations to be presented October 31st to state lawmakers. And even governmental entities need help sometimes. Benton County officials this week finished assessing damage done during recent floods. Robert McGowan, the county's director of emergency management, says that nearly $5 million in damage was done in the city's and unincorporated parts of the county. When I talked with him Wednesday morning, he said that the county would ask state and federal officials for disaster assistance.
I will submit the numbers to the Arkansas Department of Emergency Management. They will send somebody up to do assessments to see if they agree with our numbers. If they agree with the numbers that we have submitted, then they will request to FEMA Region 6 a federal disaster declaration. If then FEMA sends representatives in, they check our numbers, and if they agree with them, then they either recommend or not to the president that he either sign or not sign off on the disaster. And at that point, it's up to him.
FEMA assistance could cover up to 75% of the cost of repairing damage in the county, while state assistance could provide an additional 12.5% of the cost. And a new nonprofit in Rogers officially opened yesterday to help women from disadvantaged situations get on a trajectory of economic independence. Jana Behrens is co-founder of the Northwest Arkansas affiliate of Dress for Success. She says that clients will be referred to Dress for Success through area women's shelters, educational institutions, job training programs, and other nonprofits that serve disadvantaged women and families.
Once they have an interview set up, they can come to us, and then we will suit them for their interview. So we'll provide the professional clothing and accessories that they need to, you know, make a good impression in their first interview. And also the confidence that it takes, right? The suit brings them confidence. So that's one of the services. And then one of two things can happen. One is they get the job, great. And they can come back, and then we'll provide a mix and match wardrobe to kind of tie them over for the week or for a week. So then they can actually, as they start working, they don't have to make that major investment into clothing.
In addition, Behrens says that the organization will offer professional women's groups to help educate women on professional issues such as managing finances or workplace conflict. But for clients whose interviews aren't successful, Behrens says that the group will offer programs for helping them find other job opportunities. And finally, Arkansas is apparently doing more to help those ensnared by human trafficking. That's according to a recent report by the Polaris Project, a global organization that aims to eliminate the worldwide problem of human trafficking and modern-day slavery. In its 2013 state ratings on human trafficking laws, Arkansas was ranked with 31 other states in the top tier of states that have passed significant laws to combat human trafficking. Arkansas was also recognized as one of the most improved states in 2013, which State Representative Greg Letting of Fayetteville says is a notable distinction.
In their 2012 rankings, Arkansas stood among just 4 of the worst states in the country in terms of the laws they had on the books to fight human trafficking. And the year before that, in 2011, when I and other legislators first began working on anti-human trafficking legislation, we were among the worst 9. So we were among a very limited number of states that still didn't have the necessary tools to fight this crime. So the fact that we are now not just one of the best, but one of the 4 most improved, I think is really a credit to the people who came together with bipartisan legislation and advocacy groups that came together this session to get that legislation passed.
The improved ranking is a result of a trio of bills that Representative Letting says were originally one bill, but were eventually passed individually for greater chances of at least some reforms being passed.
The 2013 bill establishes human trafficking as a crime in Arkansas and really gives some teeth to penalties for prosecutors to go after human traffickers. We had another that the Safe Harbor Act, Senator Chris Elliott, I carried it in the House. Unfortunately, a lot of times when young women or young men are rescued from a trafficking situation and they have been engaging in prostitution by force, they are nonetheless charged with prostitution, and we didn't feel that was right. And so Polaris Project has made it a priority to get what they call Safe Harbor Acts passed all across the country.
The third bill aimed at human traffickers, which Representative Letting sponsored in the House, gives prosecutors more legal grounding to go after traffickers with stiffer penalties for those found guilty of the crime. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Ed Stilley has made musical instruments for decades, and his instruments are truly like no others. Ed is a man who has not let the conventions of the 20th or the 21st century bind him. On his land in Hogscald Holler, Ed has used any and almost everything within his reach to make guitars, mandolins, and violins. Inside those instruments are bed springs, saw blades, and other unconventional parts. Later this month, as part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival, Donna Stierna and Kelly Mulholland of Still on the Hill will celebrate Ed and his instruments. On Friday, August 23rd, they'll have a jamboree inside the Walton Art Center's lobby. Music played on Ed's instruments, with Ed expected to be in attendance. Donna says this collaboration, years in the making, actually started when she saw an Ed Stilley original guitar for the first time at a friend's house.
Nina Luther, I was over having a visit with her. She's a friend of mine. And there was an Ed Stilley guitar sitting on her fireplace hearth. And I was like, what is that? That is amazing. So they used to be his next-door neighbor. And she told me all about it. And I said, Kelly has to see this. And I ran and got him and brought him. And the Luthers took us over to meet him for the first time. So we had an introduction.
What was it about the guitar that made you stop?
Well, it was like nothing I'd ever seen. Every single bit of it was so original. This particular guitar still stands out because the internal parts were, it actually had a right guard aerosol can carefully mounted inside, along with a spring and a saw blade and door springs. And later on, we actually had it x-rayed and found out that it also had a plastic Dixie cup mounted inside very carefully. Way inside.
And this is an Ed Stilley original.
Yes, yeah. And quite typical. All of his instruments have a whole bunch of metallic stuff inside.
Well, it's interesting because I've known of people who say they play by ear, but he makes instruments by ear.
Oh, what a lovely way of saying that.
That's perfect.
I mean, because he thinks about the way he wants it to sound, and then he just finds what he finds.
Each one seems to be an invention unto itself. You know, there's no repetition. He just keeps on moving on, and whatever's in his shop, he sticks it in there, and he mounts it in there very carefully. But he has come up with a lot of really good ideas.
Well, now, I've been to Ed's house. It was years ago. Russell Cothran, photographer,
yes,
and I went out there, and Russell took some pictures, and I talked to Ed. But I tell you, I could spend the next 200 years trying to find this place again, and I don't know if I could.
Yeah, it's in the Hogscald Holler, which a lot of people know that because it's a popular swimming area on Beaver Lake, or it was. Used to actually be a nudist beach down there, apparently, in the 70s.
Really? Did not know that.
That's what I've
heard.
In
the Hogscalds, yeah. Right, yes. Across the
But,
Mains.
You know, there's a lot of, it's a very colorful place, the Hogscald Holler, actually where they scalded hogs in the creek bed a long time ago. But Ed lived there his whole life until about 205. And then for health reasons, they moved him a little, about 10 miles away up on the highway.
Now, if someone makes these brilliant, eccentric, wonderful instruments, you might think they get rich. How much money has he made from selling these instruments?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. That's one of the most beautiful things about it. He has stuck to that. Ed never would take money for his instruments. He never sold an instrument. He's said to have made over 200. They're scattered all over the region. But somebody told me that they asked him if he would sign the instrument, and he refused because he said God made it.
And he's given several of them to young people, right?
Most of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of those young people are now older. Yeah,
in their 20s.
This was many years ago, yeah.
See, we're working on a book project to celebrate this Ed's work. And so we've been kind of like detectives trying to find them all. Ed doesn't have a list, and he can't remember who he gave them to. So just one leads to another, and we've actually found 45, 50 so far.
Wow.
And we have borrowed 25 for this show.
He sometimes leaves you songs or messages on your phone machine?
Yes, we were so honored. He has a little circle of people that he calls on a regular basis and asks if he could sing a hymn for you. And if you're not home, he just does it anyway on the answering machine. And as we're not home a lot, I have a collection. I made a little CD of about 14 or 15 of them that he's just in the last 3 or 4 months. They come quite pretty fast now.
Sunday, 3:25 p.m.
How did this show come together?
Well, you know, I must say we owe a great thanks to Brian Hembree, Three Penny Acre, and also the director of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. And this was his idea. He knew what we were up to. We're very close friends. And he had this vision that, you know, last year they had the Woody Guthrie tribute in the gallery during the festival.
He wanted
something worthy of that. And he got a hold of us, and he knew we were working on this book project and that we had a lot of photographs. And he suggested that we get together and see if we can make this happen. And he's just been invaluable in making it, bringing it to fruition.
Yeah. Oh, and the photographer, several of the photos, a huge amount of the photos, are by photographer Tim Hawley from Springfield, Missouri. He's been going out for the last couple of years, going with us out on these excursions to find these instruments and taking amazing photos of the instruments, close-ups of the instruments, and portraits of many of the people that received instruments.
Aren't a lot of them inscribed? Hasn't he written some messages on them?
They're always inscribed with the words, true faith, true light, have faith in God. And there's a funny story. One of his relatives, he had given a guitar, and the early guitars didn't have that on there, simply because he did not have a router. In fact, he didn't have electricity in his shop at first. But when he got a router, he learned how to inscribe with it. And he would freehand that in every guitar. Well, one of his relatives brought the guitar back because some of the marbles he'd inlaid in the top had fallen out. And so when she got it back, it had it on there.
Donna, you have your fiddle, and it's in a traditional fiddle case. Kelly, you have a box here that is taped together. It's an old U-Haul box. And
you'll see. The reason for that is because, well, this is Donna's fiddle that Ed gave her a long time ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Donna's fiddle is particularly nice in that it has a chainsaw sprocket mounted inside.
Oh, my goodness. Now, look at this.
I wish you could see what we just pulled out. It's one of his butterfly guitars. It looks like it has two giant Mickey Mouse ears. He calls it his butterfly guitar, and he's only made maybe four butterfly guitars. So we're honored. This is one of ours.
Now I see some brass there in through the hole there.
That's right. Well, this is a steel rod which extends all the way from end to end. It goes right through the neck. So it serves as what they call a truss rod, but it keeps it going all the way to the other end. Also, there's two big door springs.
My fiddle has springs also in it. That's a trademark. He puts springs in.
And then also, what you can't see in here is the saw blade, but I'll make a little sound with it.
Now, this is inside the guitar.
Big people circular sub.
And it's just but you're reaching inside the guitar to do that.
And it's not just haphazardly mounted in there, too. What a lot of people you can't know just by looking is that the saw blade, it's a circular saw blade, and it's sandwiched between two large coil springs so that it's allowed to ring like a bell.
But one of the exciting things in the exhibit, we also have x-rays of the instruments.
Oh, and so those will be
And they were beautiful, large x-rays of the instrument, so you'll actually be able to see all the works.
You know, I see these in your hands, your fiddle, and they both have the inscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but think, boy, I could see these in the Smithsonian.
Yes.
I mean, these are American works of art here.
Some of the finest folk art we've ever laid our eyes on.
I think we're slowly creeping towards the Smithsonian. I think this is a starting place. Like I say, we have a book project, and we're hoping that opens doors. I don't even know why we do this. This is not part of our job. This is a labor of love. You know, we do play concerts and this. And well, you know, maybe I know why we do this. Maybe this is our way of repaying Ed, because these instruments have been at the core of our performance since 2005.
And they bring us such joy in whether we're playing for children or adults.
And this is in a concert, and you get this out.
Oh.
It's kind of like having a kid in the act, you know.
Except you're in control of it, I guess, right?
Yeah, more or less. His instruments are a little challenging to play, but you know, but that's not that's part of the charm,
right? Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, can you approach this butterfly guitar or this fiddle in the same way you'd
No, not really.
No,
my fiddle is not to scale. It's maybe more the scale of a viola. It's longer neck and.
The guitar is a very crude fretwork.
A little higgledy-piggledy.
Yeah, and you know that's part of what's interesting about the instruments is the fretwork is crude, but that also gives each instrument its own distinct intonation characteristics. So that when you're a guitar player, what you have to do is surrender to it. Instead of it's important when you play one of his instruments not to expect it to sound like you want it to sound, but actually to follow where it wants to take you.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was part of the key to working with it.
Like the fiddle here almost has a little bit of a sitar sound to it. And the quality of it is, I find it really charming. The vibration that I feel on it, I wouldn't want to play it on every song. It's quite a heavy instrument, maybe weighs close to 25 pounds.
And by the way, we are going to kind of camp out in the gallery at the Walton Arts Center all weekend during the Folk Festival. Mm-hmm. And we're going to make it our job to explain these instruments, get them down for people, play them. If they want to hear a particular instrument, I'll get it down for them and let them play it too.
We'll
as long
some
as
hands
we're there,
on.
You know,
people can try them.
We'll be there to tell stories, answer questions about Ed, tell stories about Ed. You know, whatever it takes.
This is something else.
This is a dream come true for us.
Yeah,
we are so excited to do this.
Do you mind? Can we hear these?
Yeah, you know, we would love. Now, we've been playing, for years we've been playing a song that we wrote together that tells a story about why Ed does this. And it's on one of our CDs, and it's on a DVD that a lot of people have seen on AETN. But today what we're going to do is unveil a brand new one that Donna wrote. And it has, really, this one we decided. Our other song is very serious and not really appropriate for children. And we needed something a little lighter.
And something that children could relate to, more about Ed's resourcefulness.
Okay. That's one thing we want kids to get from this more than anything is that, you know, maybe you could try to make something yourself. You know, look how this man, he didn't have any training. Nobody told him how to do this. And he didn't go any. He just everything. The instruments made entirely of stuff that he got from his yard, except for the tuning pegs.
Yeah.
So it teaches resourcefulness, you know. But this is a cute little song.
In the song, there's a whistling part. So you and the listening audience, when we
including
when we
Kyle,
whistle, you got to whistle with us.
All right.
Okay.
So don't turn your mic off. We're going to need you. All right.
We've had you sing with us before.
Yes, you did.
All right. So here we go. I think this is the world premiere as far as I know.
Yeah.
Ed Stilley's a hard-working man, raised five children off the land, had a floppy-eared mule pull his plow, chickens in the yard and a milking cow. When the sun went down at the end of the day, he'd put that mountain and his mule away.
Get out a saw, get out a chisel,
grab a hunk of wood, then he'd sing and he'd whistle. Pork chop bong, whittle for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, it'll like a sound when the mopar jiggle. Oh, oh, well, years ago, Ed said to me that back around 1983 that the Lord gave him a special vision showing him his life's mission. So he made guitars and he gave them away. He never took a dime for pay. He'd get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then he'd sing and he'd whistle. Pork chop bone, whittle for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, it like a sound when them old parts jiggle. Oh, here we go.
Okay, everybody whistle.
Stilly, he's a clever man. He used whatever he had on hand, pots and pans and metal things, to help him make them guitars ring. Well, he taught me that I could do most anything I wanted to. I just get out a saw, get out a chisel, grab a hunk of wood, then I'll sing and I'll whistle. Pork chop bone, whittle for a bridge, tailpiece made from a rusty old hinge. Door spring saw blades mounted in the middle, it like a sound when them old parts jiggle. Whoa.
That's wonderful. How heavy is the butterfly guitar?
I think it's about 28 pounds. 28 pounds. Probably a little on the heavy side for most guitars. Mm-hmm. It's actually not just glued together. It's nailed together.
It's solid.
It's tough as it can be. And, you know, so after our shows, when we do a Steel on the Hill show, we always put it on a stand and invite the audience to come up one at a time and sit and hold it and listen to it and take pictures and so thousands and thousands of people have held the butterfly guitar.
If you put your ear on the guitar, even if you don't know how to play, and you give it a strum, then you can hear all the metallic and the magic inside it. And you just watch people; they just gloss over when they give it a strum. It's just like it's just unworldly.
Then you can hardly get it back.
Yeah.
Like, excuse me. Okay. Next.
Have you of the 25 that you have? Bar, have you played each of those instruments?
Yes, they're all, by the way, all 25 of them are players. They've all got all their strings on them, all their frets on them. They're all working. They'll all be actually tuned up,
thanks
ready to
Kelly
play.
Fixing them all up.
There's some of them that they definitely, some of them play better than others. Yeah. And some of them are pitched low because I don't feel like they have the, you know, the neck. I worry about whether I brought them up to full tension, whether they'd be safe enough. So I leave them low.
Which
but that's kind of interesting, too.
Yeah.
Some of them will handle that low pitch real nicely. Mm-hmm. But I'd be real happy to demonstrate them for people and show them the details and look inside. I'm also setting up. We borrowed tons of artifacts from his workshop, and especially for the children, there's a part of the display will show how Ed works, and it'll start with, you know, the raw wood. It'll show his pegboard that he bends the side on. It'll show some instruments that were never finished, so you can see inside and how the metallic objects are sitting in there. So it'll step by step. You'll see how Ed did this.
This is all going to be in the lobby. This is going to be exhibit is going to be something else.
It really is.
And flip put off pictures from the Hog Skull days.
Yes, cannot forget that.
Oh,
those are so
fabulous.
Precious, which you know about. Flip put off the writer for the Morning News, 1997. took a great set of black and whites with a regular old film camera, one of the last before they moved off to digital. And those there'll be eight of those photographs, beautiful photographs of Ed when he was in his prime. Because, right, you know, I should mention, Ed stopped making musical instruments about 2005 just because his fingers could no longer do it. It's not because he wanted to stop, but he just, his body couldn't carry it on. But he did do it for 25 years.
Kelly Mulholland and Donna Stierna are the duo Still on the Hill. They'll host a performance of music made on Ed Stilley-created instruments inside the Walton Arts Center lobby on Friday, August 23rd. It's part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. It will take place inside the lobby that Friday from 4 until 6, just before the main stage entertainment begins. You can learn more about the event and the entire festival at FayettevilleRoots.com.
Those are our honorees for 2013.
Cameron. Alan Wilburn, Director of Communications for Fayetteville Public Schools, announces the four newest additions to the Fayetteville Schools Hall of Honor last week at 324 Ballroom on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The announcement event was hosted by Jose's, whose co-owner, Joe Fennell, was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2003. Past honorees Margaret Willock and Jeff Koenig were also present. The Hall of Honor is presented by the Fayetteville Public Education Foundation. Here's the foundation's executive director, Cambry Brooks Holt.
We're a foundation that provides funding to the Fayetteville Public School System. We receive donations from individuals and sponsors. Our main goal is really to provide opportunities for students in the Fayetteville School District to achieve their highest level and for educators to be able to create innovative programs as well as caring citizens to be able to be engaged in the education of our children.
Thanks to those sponsors and private donors, the foundation distributed $175,000 to Fayetteville School District for the 2013-14 school year, through grants and scholarships directly to students. The Education Foundation began the Hall of Honor in 1997 due to a need within the district to recognize the role models that exist for today's students. Some are alums, but not all. As Cambry explains, there are three areas that they honor.
Past educators of the Fayetteville Public School System, alumni or graduates, as well as friends of the Fayetteville Public School System. And those honorees reflect the service and the commitment that they have committed to the community. So it is really looking at those who have graduated who are friends or educators and the things that they have done to improve the education system in Fayetteville.
Since it began 17 years ago, the Hall of Honor has honored 57 individuals. It's an open nomination process. Nominations are kept on file indefinitely. Just because they didn't win the year they were nominated, they will continue to be considered for years to come. A private committee selects three of the nominees each year. Though this year is unique, there are four honorees in 2013.
This year is unique in that we had a couple who really rose to the top in the way of their contributions to the Fayetteville public education system, and that was Denise and Hershey Garner.
Though neither Denise nor Hershey went to or graduated from Fayetteville Public Schools, their children did. And since moving to Fayetteville in 1990, they have been very active in the community and have received many awards, including the Dorothy Lindquist Volunteer of the Year Award from the Fayetteville Public Schools. Here's Cambry with another unique factor.
And then we also had the unique situation this year of honoring the late Rudy Moore, who was one of the largest, over a period of time, contributors to the education system. He passed earlier this year, and so he was also unique to this class of inductees, and so his wife and his family are going to be accepting his on his behalf.
Though the late Fayetteville District Judge Rudy Moore graduated from Springdale High School, he served in the role of Fayetteville School District Attorney for 23 years and also served two terms on the school board. He joins his son, Tony-nominated director and director of television and films, Jason Moore, a 1989 Fayetteville High graduate. Jason was inducted in 2005. The fourth honoree, Hugh Kincaid, graduated from Fayetteville High in 1952. Since then, He says he's seen the district go through many changes.
I've always felt that we were the Lighthouse District, and I felt I had a great education even back then. It's changed. I graduated from the old high school and helped build what's now the old high school. The summer I graduated from high school before I started college, I worked with that construction crew. So a lot's changed, and it's changing again. So that's but I think in terms of the quality of education, it's just improved dramatically over the years, and it's still just the best anywhere.
After high school, Hugh went on to the University of Arkansas, eventually graduating from the School of Law in 1959. Serving as both a private and city attorney in the 1960s, and finally as director of planned giving for the University of Arkansas. He has served on many community boards and represented a variety of organizations, including 12 years on the Fayetteville School Board. A native Fayettevillian, his children graduated from the district and his grandchildren plan to. All are students in Fayetteville Public Schools. Hugh says it is quite an honor to be included this year.
I kept thinking they would change their mind before the announcement, but no, it's a great honor, and I'm privileged to be a part of that group. That's a distinguished group that I'm being honored with.
Hugh says that the other honorees this year have given a lot to the community, and that he and Rudy Moore go back a very long way, even serving on the Fayetteville School Board together. The Hall of Honor induction ceremonies will be held Thursday, October 17th, at the Fayetteville Town Center, with a reception beginning at 5:30.
Later today on This American Life, a sheriff in California has a problem. His deputies spend too much time busting small-scale pot farmers, so he devises a plan to let the farmers grow their pot as long as they register with the sheriff. Pretty good, right? Bust the big guys instead? So what did his deputies think?
The sheriff is off his rocker.
Stories of people who are just trying to help. Later today.
This American Life, just ahead, beginning at 10 this morning on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Beaver Lake might be the most well-known, but it's not the only man-made lake in Benton County. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Crejeda has this report about the history of a nearby lake, as well as the story behind its name.
Recent rains have been keeping water levels high in local lakes, including Lake at Atlanta. The man-made lake rests in a valley located just a few minutes east of downtown Rogers. One of my earliest memories of the area was a classmate's birthday party at Clark Pavilion. The first grade version of myself was confused as to how Arkansas had a Lake Atlanta, because Atlanta was definitely located in Georgia. Gabe Land, director of the Rogers Historical Museum, says over the years, people have often omitted that second A when pronouncing the lake's name. However, the correct pronunciation is Lake at Atlanta, and it was named after the wife of businessman O.L. Gregory.
O.L. Gregory owned the big vinegar plant in Rogers, and it went under a number of different names over the years, but for much of its history, it was O.L. Gregory Vinegar. And if you look for vinegar collectibles, you'll see bottles and jugs that still have that name on them. They said it was the largest vinegar plant in the United States, perhaps in the world, when it was in its full production. As that was back in the days, he had started in the early 1900s in the vinegar business, and that was back in the days when this area had so many orchards. And one of the uses for all the apples that had issues or had fallen to the ground was to send them to the vinegar plant. So it was a nice compliment to the local apple industry.
Bland says what's left of the vinegar plant is located behind a brightly colored water tower on North First Street. The museum director says Gregory had vinegar plants in other places, but he and his wife at Atlanta lived in Rogers. In Greek mythology, Atalanta is a renowned and swift-footed huntress. Bland says in the 1930s, the Works Progress Administration was funding several projects, including two in Rogers. One of those projects was paving some streets in downtown, and the other was to create a lake by damming Prairie Creek. Gregory donated much of the land for the project with the stipulation that the lake be named for his wife. According to the museum's website, the lake was created in 1936 when the WPA built a high earthen dam across Prairie Creek. Bland says by September of 1938, workers were ready to test the dam. The lake was stocked with bass and brim, and it became a destination for anglers. By 1949, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission drained the lake and replaced the stock with more medium-sized fish, and a fishing pier was constructed from the eastern shore.
It was a pretty simple fishing lake for quite a while, and then gradually it became developed as different people, I guess you would call them concessionaires because it belonged to the city, got permission to put in a bait shop and fishing pier. Then the restaurant, the lakeside restaurant, went in. There was a miniature golf course that went in, and then a skating rink. And most of that development came in the very late 40s into the early 50s. And of course, the city swimming pool, when one was built, was also located at the lake. And it was, at least in the early years, I think, fed off of spring water, and it was very, very cold, is what I'm always told. So it became just a real center of outdoor activity with, you know, picnic pavilions and all the other things you would expect, along with things that might seem kind of unusual for a park, like a skating rink and a restaurant.
According to the museum's website, from 1957 through 1970, the lake served as the city's water supply until Beaver Lake became a water source. In the 1970s, a stage was added near the old tennis courts, numerous native trees were planted, and the Game and Fish Commission introduced more carp to the lake to control vegetation. In 1985, a pavilion was added to the south end of the park. In 1995, the Lakeside Pool and Activity Center was purchased by the City of Rogers and the Rogers Youth Center. The restaurant eventually served private functions, weddings, and parties, and the skating rink became the Daisy Special Events Center. Rogers Historical Museum Director Gabe Land says when she first came to the museum in 1991, a number of civic clubs were still meeting at Lakeside Restaurant. Bland says the lake also used to be the site of the city's annual 4th of July fireworks show.
We would bring our kids when they were in elementary school. So they were down there maybe into the early 90s, perhaps. And it, like I say, it was a wonderful setting for it. You could just sit on the hood of your car, the trunk of your car from the side of the lake and watch. But we've got too many people to do that anymore.
Bland says one of the best-known stories involving the lake is of a mishap by C. Jimmy Carter.
Not too long after the lake filled, one of the best-remembered things that ever happened out at Lake Out Atlanta was in January of 1940. It was very cold and the lake froze over. And we had a well-known gentleman here, C. Jimmy Carter. Now, he was young then. Well, when he grew up, he was active in selling medicines for the poultry industry and very involved in founding the Rogers Airport. But at the time, he was a young man, and he decided he was going to drive his car out onto the ice of Lake Out Atlanta. And he had one of his friends with him. And they go driving out there, and the car spins around, and then all of a sudden the ice broke through, and they both had to be rescued out of the lake, and they had to pull the car out. So that's one of the, everybody, when folks here who have been around for a long time think of Lake at Atlanta, that's always one of the first stories that comes to mind.
Last fall, the city began burning and removing the pool and old buildings located on the south side of the lake. Now all that remains is grass and a portion of a blue wall where the pool once stood. Prior to the demolition, Bland says the museum was able to go out to the site and retrieve various items like a swimming rules sign, a soda fountain, and a toadstool from the miniature golf course that she says may be used eventually in one of the museum's exhibits. As far as the site's future is concerned, Steve Glass, Director of Planning and Transportation for the City of Rogers, says the city has been purchasing land with the intent of expanding what officials are calling the Southern East-West Corridor for the city's trail system. The project will connect the Razorback Greenway to downtown Rogers and Lake at Atlanta.
No designs are complete yet, but we are looking at some trails, some pavilions. Like you mentioned, the aquatic center kind of takes the need for a pool away. But dredging the lake out, trying to restore the lake back to its original setting when it was first built, because there's a lot of sediment in it. Those are things that we're looking at right now.
Tuesday night, the Rogers City Council approved paying $225,000 for 20 acres on the northeast end of Lake Atlanta. Glass says this will be added to the approximately 52 acres the city has purchased during the last year. The council also approved a $997,000 contract with Progressive Trail Design for the construction of trails and courses near Lake Atlanta. For more information on Lake Atlanta's past, you can visit rogersarkansas.com/museum. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Happy birthday.
Good morning. It is Weekend Ozarks at Large for August 18th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
You should be so pleased we've all figured out who we are. The things you don't hear on the air. You might remember the Theater Squared production of Noises Off.
Yes, last year, yes.
And you might remember the long-suffering director who's trying to make this mess work out. Mm-hmm. And you might remember that it's an actor named Justin Cunningham.
Yes.
What you might not know is three things. He didn't see his first live play until he came to the university as an undergraduate student.
Oh, wow.
Do you know where he grew up?
Atkins.
Okay, I was going to say, because there are small towns where that, in Arkansas, where that's very much a possibility, sure.
Atkins. He fell in love with theater. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know that he does a lot of comedy.
Noises Off is a comedy, isn't it?
Yes, but yeah. Like stand-up and long-form improv. Mm-hmm. And he is going to present a comedy show this week before the third thing you might not know, before he leaves town for the MFA program at Juilliard.
Right.
Wow.
Other than that. This guy's got no talent.
It is a heck of a road from Atkins, Arkansas to Juilliard. And they only take, let me look in my notes here because my poor mind is not what it used to be. He flew up, he auditioned, he spent every nickel he had for the plane ticket, came back, and had a message on his phone before he even landed.
Wow. So he impressed Juilliard.
And they only take, I think it's 8 to 10 MFA students a year in drama.
That's it?
So it's a big deal. And if you want to go and help him support the comedy scene, which he thinks is really important, and say goodbye to him. There will be an improv show at 7:30, doors at 7:30, show at 8 on Wednesday at Teatro Scarpino in Fayetteville. It's $6. And performing will be five local companies, Village of Idiots, Naturally Improvable,
right.
Believe, Fun Bags, and his troupe, which is Musical Improv, the name of which has gone right out of my head. Hang on. Sound Effects. Okay. And his troupe, which is Musical Improv, called Sound Effects. For $6, that's a lot to see.
It's a lot to see, and not only that, but $6 is probably a good ticket price for somebody that's headed to Juilliard. You probably won't get to see him for that.
Ever again.
Right.
Well, and just the fact that this area has that many improv companies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't long ago that there were none.
Right.
It's pretty amazing. There's plenty to do this afternoon. You know, we talked Friday about things to do outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to Walker Landing Arts, 1 to 3 o'clock at Crystal Bridges. That's free. You can go see the Civil War collections of Ann Webb and Steve Burgess from 1 to 5 at Heinemann Hall at Prairie Grove Battlefield State Park. Also free. You can go across the street from KUAF to the Fayetteville Public Library, where Nancy Hartney will be signing copies of her new book, Washed in the Water, Tales from the South.
Right.
There's a story in today's profile section about her. The book sounds lovely. And that book signing is at 2 o'clock. Chamber music by the Arkansas Philharmonic at 3.
At St. Paul's?
It's actually at All Saints Episcopal Church in Bentonville.
Oh, okay.
Bentonville.
Might be the new St. Paul's. And Joseph Israel is having a CD release party for Kingdom Road at George's at 9 o'clock. And as Kevin Kinder, the What's Up music writer, said, he's probably Fayetteville's only redheaded, dreadlocked reggae artist.
We'll hear a song from him in just a few minutes.
Recorded Excellent. Inside Furman Garner.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Danish composer Håkon Børresen's Symphony No. 1 from 1901 had a grand debut that included an audience of Berlioz, Liszt, and Wagner. Hi, I'm Katie Hendrickson, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KUAF. Join me for a performance of Børresen's Symphony No. 1 in its entirety. That's coming up Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. right here on KUAF Public Radio.
Earlier this week, Antoinette Grajeda and I spoke with Joseph Israel.
Right. Joseph, born in Oklahoma, grew up in Fayetteville.
In Northwest Arkansas.
In Northwest Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And has a new CD out as of today.
Yeah.
Or as of this weekend.
As of this weekend, right.
And has become quite a recognizable name and voice in reggae across the country and internationally.
And internationally. I know he tours a lot in Jamaica and in other, you know, countries around the world. Yeah.
Yeah. So another Oklahoma-born, Northwest Arkansas-raised reggae international superstar.
Right. Right. Doesn't happen often.
No.
But he played a couple of songs when he was in Furman Garner Performance Studio, and here's one of those.
Talking to you, we're talking to you. What do you do to benefit the nations? Well, wondering why people still try to trust in politicians. Yeah, we're talking to you. What do you do to benefit the nations? Wondering why people still try to trust in this system. Never has it worked out for the benefit of the people. Fruits are not good, they're always promoting evil. Living a life of ease, they think they have no equals. But it's easier for a camel to enter through the eye of a needle. I'm talking to you, what do you do to benefit the nation? Well, wondering why people should try to trust in politicians. We're talking to you, what do you do to benefit the nations? Wondering why our people still try to vote in this system. Now, everywhere I go, oh Lord, the story is the same. They never people in mind, yet they work us so hard. We still can't get by, you leaders should be ashamed. That's why I say I'm talking to you. What do you do to benefit the nation? Well, wondering why people still try trust in politicians. Yes, we're talking to you. What do you do to benefit the nations? Wondering why the people still try to trust in this system. I wonder if you thought about all those you've misled. I wonder if you thought about those who are suffering. I wonder if you thought about all that bloodshed. By the course of your actions, something must be wrong with your head. Now, we're talking to you. What do you do to benefit the nations? Wondering why people still try to trust in politicians. Now, we're talking to you. What do you do
to benefit the nations. Wondering why my people still try to trust in this system. Hey, we talking to you, talking to you. Oh, politicians, what is the good that you're doing? What is your reason? Yes, we're talking to you. What do you do to benefit the nations? Wondering why the people still try to trust in this system.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. The one is, you know, addressing a serious situation, and from my perspective, you know, people need to question, I think, and look in, and yet we try to give it to them in a positive way. But, you know, I have a, you know, if you were to ask the politicians, what is it that they do to benefit the nation, you know, instead of benefit their pocket, you know, because right now, you can't, you know, the laws aren't benefiting the people for the most part. In fact, I mean, if GMOs, genetically modified foods, a big issue, and our food supply. What is the point of a government if they don't protect the people's interests? If they're not there to make sure we have clean water and good food, and that the farmers have everything they need to grow good seeds, good soil, to, you know, what is the point? You know, they have everything sent off to other countries where people are getting paid less. You know, it's just crazy, and then, you know, it's like the rich are getting richer, and so. And the people are getting more unhealthy. You know, America is a very unhealthy nation, and it's due to the fact that they're not educated. And what's promoted is fast foods and junk food. And so, where's the government? You know, what is the government supposed to be for the people, by the people, right? So I don't buy into it anymore. Something is wrong. So we have to, you know, if you're gonna think you're a leader, you have to be a leader. You know, if you're gonna be a follower. And then, you know, and you're going to follow the interest of your own pocketbook, well, you're no leader, even no matter what office you hold. So I look into it.
That was Joseph Israel playing Talking to You with On Harmony, Marlon Davis, and Michael Walker. They will be playing tonight at George's for a CD release party, his new CD, Kingdom Road. Doors open at 7. Show starts at 8.
And that song was recorded inside Furman Gardner Performance Studio here at the Carver Center for Public Radio.
It was.
The Fort Smith Symphony celebrates its 90th year in Arkansas during its 2013-2014 season. Season tickets are now available. Works include Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony, Wagner's Ring, the Canadian Brass, and the Living Christmas Card. Tickets and more information available at 452-7575 or fortsmithsymphony.org.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Western Grove.
Western Grove there on the eastern edge
right.
of Newton County.
Far east. Far
yes.
east corner, yeah.
Almost Boone County, actually.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny. Western Grove, eastern.
On the eastern side. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. Busy week coming up for Ozarks at Large and KUAF. Now, tomorrow, Antoinette Grajeda will have a brand new show at noon. And then Friday, we'll be live.
We'll be broadcasting live across the street from the Fayetteville Public Library with a special Fayetteville Roots Festival edition of Ozarks at Large.
That's right. Studio audience, you're welcome to come over. It's a noon event at Walker, the Walker Community Room inside the Fayetteville Public Library. We did it last year. We're doing it again this year. Then Sunday afternoon, a week from today, not Ozarks at Large, but Tales from the South, their first ever live broadcast, too, from the Fayetteville Public Library. They usually record these and then edit them down from the Starving Artist Cafe in North Little Rock. But they'll be at the library a week from today, 3 o'clock, that, too, open to the public.
I know. Very exciting.
Yes.
Very exciting weekend for us here at KUAF.
Yes.
And for all of our listeners.
That's right.
Right.
So if you want to know more, you can go to KUAF.com.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I am Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thank you so much for listening, and have a good Sunday.